Sabrina Petrofessa.
And I'm Lily Rugo.
And this is Earth's Mightiest Fangirls. Okay. So lots of stuff has been happening in, like, the mm-hmm. Marvel Universe recently.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to pick up the pace on our X-Men review series.
For completely unrelated reasons, did we think the X-Men suddenly were hyper-relevant?
Yeah, so, like...
Sarcasm.
Yeah, but this has nothing to do with WandaVision, sure. Believe that, however... If you want to believe that, you can believe that. Regardless, today we are talking about X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
This is one of the best X-Men movies, in my opinion.
I would agree with that. I mean, from the four now that I've seen, I did enjoy this one a lot. I liked this
one. I think this one is one of the best.
I did not look up any of the data.
All right, let's grab that then. Hold on. Pause. Elevator music, I don't know.
Yep. All right. So, thank you, Internet. X-Men First Class came out in 2011. It was directed by Matthew Vaughn. Screenplay by a bunch of people. Ashley Edward Miller, Zach Stentz, Jane Goldman, Matthew Vaughn. Story by Sheldon Turner, Bryan Singer. Starring James I can't say his name for some reason.
McAvoy.
James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender, Ross Byrne, January Jones, Oliver Platt, and Kevin Bacon.
How is Jennifer Lawrence not on that list?
I don't know. I did want to ask.
Honestly, because I feel like the main people that are of the cast is James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender, Jennifer Lawrence. Oh my god, what's his name? The guy who plays Nicholas Holt, I think is his name. And Kevin Bacon, yeah, he's the main bad guy. And there is, and Zoe Kravitz is in this one. I do love that.
She is?
Yeah. She's the one with the wings.
Oh.
How did you not notice that? I like see I her know. Face and I'm like, Zoe! I love her. All right. So basically, this is a prequel movie. This is like... We get to know Charles Xavier as a young man. We get to see who's James McAvoy plays Charles Xavier. He's a walking, talking man in this one. This is pre-accident.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see Michael Fassbender playing Eric Lenscher. We see Jennifer Lawrence playing Mystique. Mm-hmm. Nicholas Holt is the Beast. So on and so forth. I really liked seeing... the characters that we've known and, like, kind of seeing those origins of them. Like, we always knew explicitly Eric's, Magneto's backstory because they show it in, like, the first movie. They're like, look at this kid in a concentration camp. Like, you know.
Right.
His kind of story explicitly. So I do like getting more of the details in this movie. And, like, they've always, like, spoke about their friendship between the two of them, between Eric and Charles. So, I liked seeing them delve into that a little bit more. Obviously, anyone who ships Cherrick loves this movie. and I don't blame them, honestly. It's fairly strong. It's one it's of those ships
in this one.
That, like, I don't necessarily ship it, but, like, I'm down for it. Like, if I was reading fic and Cherrick was canon in the fic, I wouldn't leave it, you know? Like...
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad. I see both sides. I see that they're intense brotherhood. But also, I can obviously see how they're in love with each other. Like, I can see both sides.
Yeah. It's there. So, correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't rewatch this. The movie starts with us seeing... Charles meeting Mystique for the first time.
Yes. Sorry, I did watch this recently.
Like, a few days ago.
Yeah, a few days ago.
But, like, that's basically... Yeah. So, I think that that's the first thing that, like, gets turned on your head in this one, is that Mystique is Charles's friend, dare I say, sister.
Yeah.
Because she like, broke into the mansion and pretended to be his mom... Mm-hmm. And, like, immediately clocked her and was like, you're not my mom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, like, she, you know, became her little blue self.
Down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they, like, create a friendship. And mm-hmm. it's honestly, like, I love.
I really liked that. Yeah.
It was just so cute. Like, it also, like, turns everything you know upside down, because you know that Mystique is, like, Eric's second hand. Like,
yeah. Yeah, Magneto's right hand, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you're like, wait, what? I think that's what, I think when this movie came out, a lot of people were like, is this being retconned? Like, are we retconning everything? Like, what's mm-hmm. happening?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there are certain elements from the original trilogy that I feel like were retconned. Because right. we do see Patrick Stewart walking within that, like, with no wheelchair within the first trilogy. So, mm-hmm. so, stuff does get retconned.
So their friendship isn't canon to the comics?
No, it is. It is.
Oh, no, or sorry. I meant Mystique and Professor X's.
Oh, I honestly don't know. I'm not really sure. Okay. I don't know a ton about Mystique's actual backstory, quite frankly.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. I do remember that everyone was really mad at the fact that Jennifer Lawrence didn't spend a ton of time in the blue paint.
Mm.
And
but I think it made sense character-wise.
It does make sense character-wise. Also, I completely understand why an actress wouldn't want to basically be walking around nude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. That's her costume, is her walking around nude in blue paint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was also trying to think, so I just looked it up. This was the year before Hunger Games. So I was trying apparently Hunger Games is 2012. So I was trying to figure out if this was in the middle of J-Law craze.
It was. But I feel like I knew who
was
she...
Was this the start?
I feel like I knew who she was, though, because of the... I probably actually did know who she was because of the Hunger Games, because I was, like, so entrenched into the Hunger Games. But maybe mm-hmm. I hadn't seen it yet? That's what I just... I just thought the timeline was Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And then...
I mean,
X-Men.
I'm gonna double check, because that's what I always thought it was as well. Hunger Games, like, is...
The first one. It's the Hunger Games, yep. not...
Yeah, Hunger Games, March 23rd, 2012. And X-Men First Class, reading this again for my own brain, May 25th, 2011. June 3rd, 2011 in the States. My apologies.
Huh.
But I'm wondering if it was, like, a casting announcement thing, or, like...
I mean,
Hunger Games came first in my head, so I'm wondering
what it was. We probably just knew about the Hunger Games casting way... Like, they probably announced it, like, way earlier, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Because that movie was a big deal.
Yeah, because we probably just knew who she was because of the casting.
Yeah.
But not, like, not because we'd seen the movie yet.
Yeah. So I was trying to figure out when in the J-Law craze... this movie had come out.
I think it was, like, rising, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's probably rising.
Yeah. Which also, I mean, I don't know. I was never on board the J-Law craze, but I was never anti, and, like, even now, I'm just, like, I don't have a very strong opinions
because
I don't pay attention.
I turned on her when she was talking about how when they were filming the second Hunger Games, they filmed it in Hawaii, and she sat on the sacred rock.
Oh, yes. That's when she was just being ignorant.
Yeah. And, like, she didn't apologize for it.
Mm-mm.
So.
You're right. I remember that.
So that's, like.
That was, yeah, that was the end of the J-Law craze.
I just am, like, I feel like, you know, you wouldn't go to a church and just, like, sit on the altar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which it still feels less sacrilegious than what she did to these, like, Native Hawaiians, like, cultural.
Yeah.
Spot, you know?
I forgot all about that. I genuinely just, the whole thing just went over
my head.
Oh,
no, she didn't sit on it. She scratched her butt on it. That's what mm-hmm. she did. She was scratching her butt on it, and then, mm-hmm. like, something fell off of it.
Yeah.
And then she was like, and then all the Hawaiians were like, oh, no, the curse. And I was like, oh, that does not sound good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when everyone still liked Chris Pratt, because Chris Pratt was sitting next to her, and he was like, no. Like, he had kind of a face, was like, ooh, I don't like that.
Oh, that was their weird space movie.
Yeah, I think it was their weird space movie.
All right, moving on to X-Men. Anyways, yeah. J-Law was in it. Yeah. That was a whole weird thing. I forgot about literally all of that.
Yeah.
This movie's very good.
It is very good. I just, it's a very interesting origin story. We also do get more of Eric's origin story. And like how he was experimented on in the concentration camps. That the, Kevin Bacon's character, what's his name?
He goes, Schmidt is who he is when he's a Nazi. I don't remember his name afterwards.
Well, yeah, Nazi Schmidt. There we go.
Yeah.
I don't care what his name is because he's a Nazi. But he like experiments on Eric to try and like bring out his powers because like it happens in the beginning where he like, you know, the metal gates all kind of like get manipulated to him.
Bend a bit, yeah.
And then they're like, oh no, like, wow, what this kid, like, what is this? And
the only reason Schmidt knows is because, as revealed later, he's also a mutant. He knows superpowered beings exist.
Yeah, and he was like, but he was also a Nazi, so he was like cruel and mean and terrible and experimented on children. Mm-hmm. And the way that he got Eric to use his powers again, because he couldn't really access it again after that, was to bring his mother back, put her in front of him, and shoot a gun at her, and expect him to stop the bullet. This poor kid had no idea how to control his powers. A gun gets shot at his mother, he doesn't stop it, and then now for the rest of his life, he feels like that was his fault.
Yeah. That scene was very good for multiple reasons. The one that got me when the second time I watched it, was the reveal of the lab, because you start looking at Schmidt and Magneto, Eric, and then they bring the mother in, and the camera, not like an active 360, but it switches room, and you see this big glass laboratory panel, walled in room, and it's absolutely horrifying, and it's a very just chilling cinematic choice.
Yeah. Honestly, so I've been thinking about this a lot and how, like, superhero movies are at their best. Superhero stories in general are at their best when they actually have something to say and are based in reality in a way. And, like, this aspect of Magneto's backstory is so gut-wrenching because of how true it is. Because so many Jewish people died at the hands of Nazis under experimentation like this. I mean, not like this, because there were no mutant abilities, but...
Yeah. It just shows how ultimately powerless people were, even when they have superpowers.
There is something to say about, like, well, if there were mutants, then how did they stay imprisoned or whatever? Because of stuff like this. This is the same
psychological thing that keeps,
trauma. This is the same thing that keeps strong people in abusive relationships. Manipulation. Like, trauma. Trauma causes brain damage. So, like, if you are raised in that kind of environment. Also, Magneto was a child. His powers were not that strong yet. Like, the Magneto we see in the original trilogy is not the Magneto we see in this X-Men First Class movie.
We see him, there isn't a full montage, but we definitely see him, you know, time cut, as an adult, and you see him as how strong he has grown.
Yeah.
How well his control has gotten.
Yeah.
And that's also chilling in its own way.
Which is great. I honestly love that Magneto grows up and becomes a Nazi hunter. He's like, and he just like goes and hunts Nazis for a living, and that's my favorite thing about him.
I think this movie, because when you watch the original trilogy, you kind of understand both sides of Professor X and Magneto. Of Magneto is very much us against them, and Professor X is very much like give them benefit of the doubt kind of a thing. And I liked this movie the best because you could understand why they had those mindsets.
Yeah.
And also because Professor X grew up in the height of privilege.
Yeah.
So much luxury. He was like he's a genius. He's, I think superpowers aside, he He's really smart. He understands and was able to study and live in the world. He's rich. He's white. He also doesn't have a physical manifestation of how incredibly strong he is. You know? The same way Mystique does. Magneto doesn't either have a physical manifestation.
Yeah, I think the difference between being able to see someone's power, though, especially between Charles and Eric, is like you can see Charles, not Charles, you can see Eric pick up things. like a satellite or something. Like you can see the massive weight of what he does. Mm-hmm. Charles, if he doesn't want you to know he's messing with you, you don't know he's messing with you.
No, he doesn't.
So like that's insidious in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And like very deceiving. But like it's hard to visualize as an outsider because like you don't know.
Yeah, of course. I did very much enjoy I think the other fun thing about this movie is it's very good and takes a superhero story seriously, but at the same time, it has just enough camp of just like these guys have superpowers. Like that one's blue. So I very much enjoyed James McAvoy's hand-to-head acting.
Yeah.
It was just enough that like too much would have been ridiculous, but it was also enough of like,
well, sure, apparently he was given the option to use his right hand, his left hand, or both hands. And he was like, okay, and he just used one hand. And mm-hmm. I also like that there is kind of this physical manifestation for him to show like how he isn't at his height yet, you know?
Yeah,
like
he
has to put his hand to his head to like focus kind of situation.
Yeah.
Which kind of doesn't make sense to me.
It's a comfort gesture.
Yeah.
It helps him.
Yeah. So I kind of do enjoy that there is that kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
See, he has to do that and can only focus on like one person or two people at a time. But mm-hmm. like, as we've seen Charles do, he froze an entire museum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he was very select. He was able to freeze that entire museum, but not his students.
Yeah.
And just, and like, it wasn't like that was taking up so much brain power that he had to, like, sit there quietly and just do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No, he was still talking to his students and being like, all right, let's go. Like, it just, it was, it's interesting and cool to see how, like, the growth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And again, the original point is, like, Charles Xavier grew up in absolute privilege. So that's why I think he has more compassion versus, like, Eric's formative years were in a traumatic abuse
and
genocide.
And again, I think we've said it before, they are two sides of the same coin. Like, mm-hmm. the two of them truly, truly believe that, like, you can't have one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously the X-Men are often fighting Magneto himself because Magneto does go to, like, these extremes.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you can't deny that Charles does see his point of view
mm-hmm.
and kind of like agree with him, you know?
Yeah. They acknowledge, they definitely respect each other's point of view. They're just like not their methods.
There is a part of me that's like, you know what? It is kind of if we're going to relate this to other Marvel characters, Charles is T'Challa and Eric is Killmonger.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Mhm.
I think that's a very similar, mm-hmm. you know. Oh, speaking of, did you hear that they are thinking of recasting Magneto as Black?
For what? For what meant, like, what project? I hadn't heard of any new X-Men reboots.
No, I think they're, like, because eventually, the X-Men are coming into the MCU at some point.
Yeah.
And I think that there have been rumors that they want to cast a Black man to play Magneto. And you know what? I'm typically the person that's like, who cares? It doesn't really matter. Like a lot of characters that have gone from played by white people to Black people or like changed race in that way, like Zendaya as MJ,
right?
Like that doesn't matter. MJ doesn't need to be a white woman, you know?
Yeah.
I think Magneto needs to be a white Jewish Holocaust survivor. Like, I he just does. I just don't think that that makes sense to changing his backstory, because so much of his drive and motivations come from being
surviving that genocide,
a Holocaust survivor. So yeah. I don't think it makes sense to change his gender, or not gender, his race. I don't think it makes sense. It is, I think, one of the rare occasions that, like, I would disagree with casting a black actor for a traditionally white role.
Yeah, because also if they're trying to go for, like, different kinds of marginalized experiences, you can't compare a Holocaust survivor to a black man.
No.
You can't compare those experiences. No. It's absolutely dismissive to think that they are the same lived experiences.
And the wild thing to me, though, is that there just are so many black X-Men.
Yeah, just include... Speaking of, let's just go into that one next.
Oh my god, Darwin.
Let's just talk about Darwin. So before I'd watched this movie, one of my coworkers, they hate this movie because of the way they treated Darwin. And I was like, I don't know anything about X-Men, what happened? And they're like, they killed the one unkillable character, mm-hmm. and it's the only on-screen death. And I was like, what? And then I watched the movie and I was like, oh.
So Darwin's whole thing is that he can evolve to any situation to survive. Yeah. In the comics, I think there was a situation where he was like, he, like, atomized himself, basically.
Wow. Yeah.
Or, like, created a whole nother universe because it's, you know, mm-hmm. that made him survive the situation or whatever. There's been times where, like, he's been threatened and he just becomes a god.
Wow.
Like, that is the scope of his power. We don't even scratch the surface with his power in the movie. Like,
he was in the movie for a whole 20 minutes. Yeah. It was tragic.
And it is... He's not the only black character in the movie, but he is one of the only black characters in the movie, and he mm-hmm. is the first and only one to die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what's ultimately so frustrating. Like, anybody else in that scene could have died.
Yeah. And also...
Or nobody could have died.
Yeah, no one could have died. It was also how he died, because, you can't say... This is the unkillable character, and then immediately kill him off. Also, my apologies to Zoe Kravitz. I keep forgetting that you're in this movie. I shouldn't have said I shouldn't have said he's the only black character.
I mean, I think
standing next to Zoe Kravitz.
I think there is something to say about, like, Zoe Kravitz is a light-skinned black woman, and Eddie Gathegi, is that his name?
I don't remember. It's also, it's not even just, like, her and, like, POC. I generally forget her as a character as well.
Oh, wow.
So my apologies to her all around.
Okay. Well, but, like, that's what I mean. Like, I don't mean to, like, dismiss her as being a black woman in this movie. Yeah. But I think there is also colorism at play.
Mm.
Because Darwin is played by a dark-skinned black man.
Mm-hmm.
And he died.
And then Zoe Kravitz's character goes to the bad guy side.
Yeah. Immediately is evil.
Yeah.
And she's a stripper at the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So,
she did have one line in it later that, I don't know if I'd call it empowering, but it did make me think more about her original career choice, is because the mutants are hanging out in the government building, and there's this big window into a courtyard, and agents walk by and tease them about calling them the zoo and freak show and stuff. And she has a line about there, like, oh, I can't remember what it is, but it's like, it's how she's looked at when men... She's like, when men look at me with my clothes off is better than how those guys look at me now. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
That's an interesting way to think of things. I do remember that. The other thing about Darwin that I texted Sabrina about it because, you know, he died and I wasn't happy about it, so I was paying more attention to him this time I watched it. When, I can't remember his name, Schmidt attacks the compound to recruit the mutants,
mm-hmm.
he gives a whole spiel about how mutants are... Go and be viewed as less than, join him, blah, blah, blah. He says the word enslaved, and the camera cuts straight to Darwin.
Oh my
Darwin
god, makes no. A face.
Darwin does make a face about, because, you know, whatever, he's an actor, he's doing his job. But that's it. It's just like a cut to Ooh. Him for the word enslaved.
And I did not, go back to I don't remember that. That's Ooh, a bad whoever, editing choice.
Whoever cleared that choice.
Yikes.
Whoever cleared that choice, it was not that was not the choice.
Yeah. Yikes.
That was pretty bad.
Yikes. Yeah, so I honestly, so when I watched it for the first time and Darwin died, Schmidt's power is to create some, like, I don't know, nuclear energy. Bombs, I guess. Yeah. Nuclear energy. And he put a little nuclear ball into Darwin's mouth and, like, made him swallow it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know anything about his character before I went into this movie. It was more, like, after that I learned about it, and I was like, oh, wow, that, like, that's BS. Like, what the hell? And I guess when I watched it, I was like, oh, I guess maybe he can evolve to anything that's, like, an exterior attack.
That's what I was thinking when the first time I saw it, too, of just, like, something about just the sheer amount of energy. But then that just means
he can be poisoned.
Yeah.
Like,
the other thing, is throwing up not a survival tactic? I'm really confused.
I would assume that in that moment the survival tactic is like
his insides like hardening,
yeah,
diamond, or something, like, something
whatever can withstand that amount of energy. Honestly, I wouldn't have even been mad if it was like a Darwin atomizes himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, an hour later, he reatomizes himself because it's a new power and he doesn't know mm-hmm. what he can do. Like, they could have just made it temporary. Like, they didn't have to make it permanent.
The only death. Yeah.
And it didn't have to be a death. He whatever. Yeah. We're going to start talking about this for the entire movie episode if we keep, like, going off about it.
But it is a sore spot. I have a lot of my friends, and every now and then X-Men will come up on, like, Twitter and stuff, and, like, the few black nerd Twitter people that I follow, like, it comes up every time, and they're right. Yeah. It was messed up.
He was done dirty. He was done mm-hmm. dirty. Hold on. I want to look up the actor's name, though, because I feel like it was Eddie Gathegi, because I feel like he's also the guy in Twilight.
I was wondering why he looked familiar. I thought it was just because I'd seen this movie before.
No, I'm pretty sure.
But you think he's Laurent?
I think he's Laurent. Eddie Gathegi. Yes, I was correct. His name is Eddie Gathegi. Because I was obsessed with Twilight, as we all know, and I remember I memorized, like, all of those characters, like, cast names, so.
Nice.
And I think he was, like, in House, too, and I was like, Laurent is in House! Like,
good for him. Now that I put it together, I like him as an actor.
He's a good actor.
The few times I recognize him, I'm just like, you!
He is a good actor. I just think that often he plays, like, small roles. I mean, you know what? The stuff that I know him from. Like, he might have things that's... I know him from three things. I know him from Twilight, I know him from this, and I know him from House. So, like, you can't, like... I'm not the litmus test for this guy.
Yeah. So the rest of the plot, there things take a dramatic turn.
The bulk of this movie is that Charles and Eric are working together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To stop Schmidt.
Yeah.
And they have, like, a little team behind them. They have the Sonic Screamer guy. They have Beast. I don't remember his name. They
No, I feel bad. I call him Weasley Brother.
Oh. we've got Scott Summers' brother, whose first name I don't remember. He's the blast from the chest guy.
Yeah.
We've got Mystique. Butterfly is gone. Mm-hmm. Zoe Kravitz mm-hmm. is gone. I don't remember any of their names. I'm so sorry.
I only know their mutant names or their powers.
And yeah, and I think I said Beast already. So we've got we've got this little crew, and we've got that normal FBI agent lady.
Yeah, who I liked her a lot as well.
Yes, she's cool. So they've got this little team, and they're trying to stop Schmidt. And this is during the Cuban Missile Crisis. So basically, Schmidt is trying to, like, start. Or not, just Cold War, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so he's just trying to start World War III, which is,
because
I think,
he's convinced nuclear bombs are going to, one, wipe out humanity, two, trigger the mutant gene.
Yeah. I mean, that's not wrong.
Oh, okay.
the second theory, because from what we know about the mutant gene, it does, like, come out in the face of adversity often. So, like... Like, the kid who's being bullied, like, don't bully him or else he might turn into a mutant and, like, murder you. but, you know, like, Yeah, mm-hmm. like, often people's mutant ability manifests during puberty because it's such a tumultuous time.
Oh, that makes sense.
For, like, a kid, you know?
That makes sense.
And it can happen earlier or later or whatever. I think it just, like, something has to trigger it.
Okay.
Which I just don't think makes sense for how genes work, but I'm not a scientist, so who knows? And, like, speaking of how, like, the powers of these characters have grown or are not stunted, but, like, just to watch that whole thing, a lot of Eric's power comes from anger. Like, he manifests it all from anger because that's how he learned in Auschwitz. That's how he learned. So I think there is just this very beautiful moment between Charles and Eric about finding a space between joy and anger. Like finding that middle ground to access your powers from, which is just really beautiful because it literally was this scene where Eric was like, I have to be angry to do something big. And Charles was trying to get him to move, like, this huge satellite, basically.
Miles and miles away.
Yeah. And Charles was like, I think you can do it. I believe you can do it. And we all know that he can do it because we've seen him do far, far bigger.
Yeah.
Dude lifted up the Golden Gate Bridge. I think he can do a satellite. But he's just not at that level yet. And I just, Michael Fassbender is a great actor because that moment is just so good.
I loved the both of them together in that scene because that's when you know the root of their relationship, I think, is how far back this went.
And it's like how they grow and evolve with each other in this scene, you know? And I just genuinely think it's so beautiful. And throughout the movie, you do see Eric, laying the groundwork for Mystique to say, like, I want to see your true self. I don't think that you need to care, like, be Jennifer Lawrence all the time. I think you can be your blue self, you know? And she kind of grows into that towards the end.
Which, good for her. I did not like their... I liked how they related to each other. I didn't like them together.
Yeah, I mean, that's a valid...
I'm glad that was only one moment and we never saw it again.
I mean, I think that's valid, especially because I feel like there's a little, like, relationship thing happening between her and Beast. And this is also the movie where, like... Because when you know... We know Beast as a character as, like, a big blue furry guy. And you're like, wait, you're not big blue or furry. Like, what is happening?
He's a small scientist.
But he... used Mystique's genes because she's part of it. She knows she's volunteering her DNA to him, to study to see if, like, you can fix those physical manifestations, you know, like to not fix but like to hide
cure.
Them.
So they called it a cure.
Yeah, they called it a cure so that they could, you know, be a part of society without anybody looking weirdly and you don't have to, like, constantly be aware of it, you know?
Yeah. And we've talked about how X-Men is an allegory for a lot of things before, and I think
Beast
and Mystique had very valid sides. And then I guess, like, Magneto as a third party in the end of, like, some mutants, they want to hide their physical manifestations. Because it's been hard on them.
Again, it's back to the difference between someone who has like a passing privilege and someone who doesn't.
I thought it was a really good example of what those conversations were like because you understood both sides.
Yeah.
Like you never thought Beast was wrong, even if you didn't agree with him, but you empathized with where he was coming from.
Yeah. And, like, you think about the scene with Nightcrawler is talking to Mystique and in the second movie, the second X-Men. And he's like, but you can change into whoever you want to. You can hide. And she responds, I shouldn't have to.
Right.
Which is true.
Yeah. She and good for Mystique for reaching that growth.
Yeah. And I think she's on that journey in this movie. And by the end of it, she... is kind of blue for the fight. She's going into it blue. She's like, this is who I am. This is like how I'm going into it. And when she sees Beast for the first time, because he like tried to use the cure on himself and it kind of worked, but then it just turned him blue and furry. And it like enhanced his mutation actually.
Yeah.
And so like she says, I like you better this way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there is a moment between them where he says something about not liking her as her blue scaly self.
Yeah, yeah. Which, wrong move, dude. Again, you empathize.
So wrong.
But it was not that, oof, wrong
yeah,
move.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why Mystique so heavily, like, that's latches on to Eric, who's saying, your true self is, like, your beautiful self.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? So that's, like, kind of what happens in the prep. Like, basically, Charles is teaching them all how to use their powers and...
Which is a fun montage. Yeah. I love a learning montage.
Yeah, and you get the kind of OG X-Men suits, mm-hmm. like the yellow with the X crossing them. So it was nice. It was nice. But then we get to the, like, bulk, the problem.
The final fight.
The end, the final fight. Yeah. They're on this island... They're trying to prevent everything from this whole thing from happening. And honestly, two important things happen, and that's it. Do you want to discuss anything else? Because I have two things that need to be brought up, and it's Charles getting shot.
Yeah.
And Schmidt dying, like that moment.
Okay, I'm thinking, and I think that's it for now. Anything else, I'll tweet about it.
Okay, cool. So, scene one. There is a fight happening on the beach. Eric is stopping bullets, but he is an idiot and deflects it right into Charles's back.
Okay, that whole scene was absolutely heartbreaking. It's one of the last few scenes of this movie because this is the split between Eric and Charles. And I feel bad because it's the FBI agent. She's just trying to do her job. She's trying to look out and save people. And I guess... she forgot bullets are made of metal, and she just reacted.
Yeah,
because she's trying to fire.
Yeah, she's firing on Magneto, which is stupid.
Yeah.
And in an effort to save himself, because saving himself, deflects it right into Charles, and he just crumbles. And then
he's devastated.
I think does an even more stupid thing, pulls the bullet out. Sir.
That's not
good. Did nobody ever tell you that you shouldn't mess with a spinal injury?
Apparently. I mean, obviously not. But that whole scene is devastating and heartbreaking, as much as it retcons everything, is because it happens, and the first person to run to Charles is Eric.
Is Eric, because he knows that he fucked up. Mm-hmm. He knows he messed up.
And he won't let anyone else get close.
Yeah,
the fights, like, both sides stop.
Everything stops. It's just so, so devastating. Yeah. Like, honestly, this is why I think nothing else really matters in this end scene. Like, whatever, they save the day. They save the day.
End of story.
End of story. But, like, this, it's just the beginning of the end. And he's just like, I can't feel my legs. I can't feel my legs. Mm-hmm. And we're all like, and this is why I say that this movie kind of retconned stuff from the original trilogy, because we do see a Patrick Stewart walking around.
Right.
So I don't think any of us expected this to be the movie that he lost his legs in.
Yeah. The other one that gets me about this scene is, and I wish we'd seen it a bit, but this is also Mystique's decisive point, because... she grew up, her best friend is Charles Xavier. They
basically
love each other.
Her brother.
Her brother. And she goes to him first, because Magneto is like, I'm leaving, I'm pro-mutant side, come with me. He offers, come with me. And Mystique steps forward, and she goes to Xavier first. And that was heartbreaking, because they say their goodbyes.
Yeah.
He reads her mind, and he's like, I know you want to leave with him.
Yeah.
But she does. That broke me.
It really is, it adds a layer. It adds a layer. And on,
like, she was going to stay with Charles. She was going to stay by her boy, who was just grievously injured, and they both let each other go.
But she needed to move on with Eric. Like, they're just, Charles will never understand what it's like to be like that. Mm-hmm. And while Eric also can never understand, because he does have, like, non-mutant passing privilege. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a better word for that, but whatever. Human passing privilege, like, but mutants are human too. Regardless, like, he does sympathize in a way that Mystique gravitates toward.
Yeah.
Which I think is just very, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the other scene that I want to talk about, which honestly is not as serious as the other, I don't know why I didn't talk about this one first, but this is where we're at right now. I just loved the scene where Schmidt dies.
Yes, I have seen it, so don't worry. I have seen the scene. The second time I watched it, I could not do it. It's not graphic.
It is intense, though. But it's incredibly
violent.
Yeah.
So, like,
whew. So this is, like, so Schmidt actually is the one who has Magneto's helmet, like, the iconic Magneto helmet.
Because it blocks out Charles Xavier. Because
it blocks out Charles, which is amazing. But it is also so iconic to the look. And this is the scene where Magneto, like, steals it from him. And also, so earlier in the movie, he killed a Nazi with a coin that he got, you know, from the Holocaust. It's like a Nazi coin.
No, I remember. That's the coin from that Schmidt in the camps was like, move this coin or I'm going to shoot your mom.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So he's held on to this coin for decades.
Yes. So he's had this forever. And I think his goal has always been to kill Schmidt with this coin. And it is intense.
It's so gnarly. And again, you don't. You see it, but it's not graphic.
Well, because what he does is the coin is right at his forehead. And he forces the coin through Schmidt's skull and through the back of his skull. And we've seen him use this coin to kill before.
Mm-hmm.
But when he did it at the bank, it wasn't as...
Slow.
But he, like, he tortured this man.
Which and, I don't fault him for it.
I don't fault
just
him for
watching
it
was not fun.
I know, you're not good at this stuff. You're not good at that stuff, like. But, it's just such a good scene. And I, there's something so vindicating about watching Nazis die.
Yeah. And I think the scene was also really well written and well played because the whole contention that Charles and Eric also work on in the relationship is revenge isn't going to bring you peace. Like, you're going to be a changed person if you kill Schmidt. That's Charles' side. Okay, and
like, the thing that baffles me about that is that, like, Magneto's just been killing people.
Yeah, he doesn't have clean hands. But there, I do agree that there is an emotional change with something quite as personal. And then Eric was like, I hear you, bro, but I'm gonna do it. I'm going to kill this man. Well, I'm going to kill this man.
I think that's, again, one of those things where, like, obviously I've never been through trauma, even slightly similar to that. But I think it's one of those things where it's like, I would never be able to tell someone, like, oh, like, forgive your abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've never been in that situation, like, or, like, to want to, like, see that person be happy or to live or something like that. Like, I know that if I was, like, I assume that if I was ever, like, gonna be, if I ever was in a situation where I was severely traumatized or abused or something by someone, I wouldn't want to see that person alive.
Yeah, it goes back to just... this is ridiculous. The only example I can think of is Aang and Katara and the Southern Raiders episode. Yeah. Is it's just the people who care about you most don't want you to cross this line.
Yeah, but I think the difference between
those two is
Eric has already crossed that line.
Yeah.
I think this is another discussion to have, but like literally every single person on the gang has killed someone.
Yeah.
Because just, like, from physics alone, like,
yeah.
But I think if it was an aged up show and they were allowed to kill people on it, I would be like, yeah, kill them. Like, because there's a history of her already killing people. Like, you know,
I think,
like,
it's just the premeditated aspect. Anyways, I understood Charles' side, and he just wants to pull his friend back from the brink. Yeah. And as part of this whole plot is Charles is in Schmidt's head. That's how he's stopping him. He's doing, like, yeah. He's freezing him.
Oh, and I forgot that Charles had to experience it.
Yes. So not only was Charles kind of secondhand witnessing his best friend, the person he cares about, one of the people he cares about most in the world, experience and live through this,
he was also the victim.
He also experienced it. Mm-hmm. So that's just something neither of them are going to come back from.
Yeah, I forgot that that was how he was restrained. This is that why was, I should watch these movies again, but I just...
this didn't. Was my roommate pointed that out.
Yeah, well, I knew that. Like, I knew that. I just forgot it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and...
That's just, it's so brutal on so many levels. It's brutal. A very good scene for everything it represents.
It is brutal, and I understand why Charles would tell him to, like, oh, don't kill him. Like, revenge isn't gonna cure anything. I just also don't think that Charles is in any position to tell him how to handle that kind of grief.
Yeah.
Like, that was the point I was trying to make earlier. Is that, like, Charles, who does come from such a high place of privilege,
mm-hmm.
doesn't really have the ground to stand on, so to speak.
Yeah.
No pun intended. To tell him that she should let this man live, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I get it would be for you, but, like, still, I just don't think that he has no authority to tell him to do that kind of thing. And I do sympathize with the fact that Charles did have to experience that death.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that happened. But I don't know. I just sympathize with Magneto too much to be like, you shouldn't have killed him. Like, I sympathize too much. I would never say, no, don't kill a Nazi. I wouldn't. And they even try to pose this man as like, well, I didn't actually believe in Nazism.
I wasn't a real Nazi. Like, I just sided with them.
You're a Nazi.
Yeah, at that point, you're literally a Nazi.
You're literally a Nazi. If you're working with Nazis, if you're experimenting on people like Nazis did, if you're just... I'm sorry, he was at one of the biggest death camps. You're telling me that you're not a Nazi? Like, yeah. You're a Nazi. I don't play with this Nazi sympathizer shit.
I know. I think Magneto and Charles Xavier, and I'm glad I got into X-Men, because I think they are the two most fascinating characters in, like, fictional canon. I think they're so good, especially together, opposed, together, apart, whatever.
I mean, I genuinely think that this is contentious. I genuinely think that some of the X-Men movies are better than all of the Marvel movies.
That's fair. And I think...
Like, the next one especially. So I love Days of Future Past.
Yeah, I've heard that one's really good. I want to see X-Men stories told with MCU budgets.
Yeah. I mean, when that happens, I'm
looking forward to that.
So much
because especially if they get the right directors and writing teams behind it, I think they could tell really good stories with the content that's there.
Yeah, and I mean, so much of what we've been watching, too, is kind of, like, decades old at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this movie is 10 years old. The first movie we watched is the first X-Men is 20 years old. Like...
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, when we watched it for the first time for the podcast, it was 20 years old at that point, because that movie came out in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So, we are watching and reviewing movies that do have a bit of a time...
Yeah.
Stamp on them. That doesn't mean they're not good.
Still hold up. I would say First Class definitely held up.
I love this movie.
The characters held up. Maybe parts of the movie didn't.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is that in 2011, people hated what happened to Darwin.
Like
that's true. This was this wasn't some new outrage. Everyone hated
it.
That.
Was yeah. That's not a new outrage. It, the second the movie came out, people were like, "Why would you do that to Darwin?" Excuse me. Yeah. And like even people who are racist can see how much of a stupid move that is, you know, because of just the scope of his powers. Like even the racist comic book fanboys would watch that scene and be like, why would you kill Darwin? Because Darwin's character is established as an unkillable character.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I don't know what I was talking about. I think they're all very, I think the X-Men are really good, and I'm excited. Again, as long as they don't mess with the core elements too much when they do the reboots, I'm excited to see X-Men movies with MCU production levels.
I'm also excited to see how they handle the prejudice of the X-Men. Because if you're a mutant in the Marvel Universe, there is a lot of prejudice against you. If you're a mutate, which is someone who doesn't have the X gene, but, like, has extra abilities. Like, X-Men. Not X-Men. Like, Spider-Man is a mutate because a spider bit him and made him. He wasn't born that way. It was something that happened to him later.
Right.
So, the way that mutates, like, people who are on the Avengers team are treated are, like, way higher tier. Like, people people respect Spider-Man. People respect, like, Daredevil. People respect people who've been turned into this but weren't born that way. But people do not respect mutants.
Right.
Like, there is a discrepancy here. And I think I've seen that, like, X-Men always help with Avenger problems, but Avengers almost never help with X-Men problems.
I can see that. That would be a very interesting dynamic to explore.
Yeah.
Also, hopefully, because the MCU has realized that, like, you know, these having more diverse people behind the screen, behind the scenes, has been really helping our bottom dollar. Yeah. I'm hoping that they'll really diversify the writers and directors of these movies. If they're going to make all of these allegories about, like, this story could stand in for a queer person, this story could stand in for a disabled person, I want to see that representation behind the screen, too.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see a queer director.
Especially because they are bringing in so many queer characters.
Yeah. So it's not just like, oh, this story is relatable to marginalized folk. I want to see that. I want to see them walk the walk as well.
Yeah. So this week was X-Men First Class. Next week is WandaVision's finale.
High-pitched keening noises.
Yeah.
It's so good. I can't believe how much I love WandaVision.
Yeah. So next week we're going to be talking about the rest of the series. Last week? 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago. We did the WandaVision episodes 1-5. Next week will be 6-9.
Yes.
So prepare for that. Prepare for that. We don't know what's going to happen.
Absolutely no idea.
Absolutely no clue. I, like, literally, we text about this every week, and I'm just like, I don't know what's going on.
I get a lot of TikToks every Friday.
You do. I get a lot of TikToks every Friday. I'm just sending you all the theories. I'm like, here. But anyway, we're going to be talking about that next week. And then we're going to resume the X-Men watch through. So we have, in fact, skipped X-Men Origins Wolverine because that's not a good one. So
I'm just going where Sabrina leads me.
Yes. I'm just trying to lead you through the best and the necessary.
Fair.
There we go. Anyway, with that, we'll be with you till the end of the line. You can follow me on Twitter at TheSabrinaPet. You can follow Lily at Lily_Rugo. You can follow the podcast at EMFangirls. And you can check out our website, earthsmightiestfangirls.com. And send us an email at emfangirls@gmail.com. Please, if you want to help us out, get our name out there or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Like, Apple Podcasts really only, you know, like, advertises podcasts that get, like, comments and reviews and stuff like that. So just, like, you know, like, click in, be like, oh my god, I love this episode, and then, like, hit the rate, and then, like, move on. And you can also follow us on Spotify and Stitcher and lots of other places.
Yep. Thank you to Dexter Britton for letting us use their song Wonderland, and thanks to us for editing and producing.